The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Whoa. I got the number one chair today. I'm like at high volume. Welcome to We the People Radio. And
for another sparkling Sunday of fun.
Yeah, I got Squeaky with me today, so she put me in the big chair, in the captain's chair today.
And I'll be imitating Marge Simpson most of the morning.
Oh, she does a great Marge, too.
I do, man. I've been doing like... I tried to leave a voicemail. I was like trying to leave an urgent voicemail. And the more I tried to leave the voicemail, the more my voice went away. And I'm sure they were like... I called my doctor's office. They hung up on me.
Prankster.
I think they thought I was a stalker. So somebody got a blank voice message that went periodically. I'm sure that was not really all that great either.
Hey, well, we got a great show for you lined up today. We have Trevor
Loudon.
Trevor Loudon.
He is here from, well, he is here, physically here. He's not in the studio today, but he's here in the U.S. traveling on a book tour. He has written a book. He's got a couple of them. The full title of the one is Barack Obama and the Enemies Within.
Yeah, it is a total who's who at the Communist Zoo. And I'll tell you what, it is a fantastic read. We watched quite a few of his YouTube videos yesterday, and amazing and totally mind-boggling. This guy knows everybody who's everybody, and
the bad part is everybody who's bad who's everybody is working in our in our government. So
yeah, if you ever took a trip to the Kremlin and took a little study course, he knows about it. And totally amazing guy to talk to. And we're going to have him tomorrow night also at the Reading Tea Party, which should be a really fantastic venue as well.
We're going to let him go till he doesn't have any sound left. Till he sounds like me. That's how we're doing it.
Yeah, really fascinating guy.
You can find more information about him at Trevor Loudon, TrevorLoudon.com. And easy to search. He's on all sorts of programs. He was on Glenn Beck on the 26th, whatever day that was, Thursday or Friday. And so he's all over the place. And you can join in with us. You can ask questions and just follow the chat room if you'd like at wethepeopleradio.us. All Trevor's information is there. Everything about his books and all that stuff is also there.
And if you want to call in.
Yep.
If you want to call in, 530-605-4567. And we're going to have him for at least the first hour. We tried to keep him for two, but apparently he's got...
he has a life. What the heck?
He has a life.
We'll go as long as I can.
We're going to wing it. We're winging it.
Good morning, Trevor.
Thank you for coming on.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're fantastic this morning. How are you doing?
Good. Great to be on with you guys.
We're doing better than the we're doing better than the communists are doing. You're all over these guys. I mean, it was like you rattled off a list. It's like, we got to hold on, pause. We have to go get paper and pen.
Oh man, I was taking so many notes. I couldn't believe the information that you had on these guys.
So where would you like to start with us this morning?
Well, look, it's really over to you. You know what your audience is interested in, but. You know, you've had some interesting developments in California recently with your state senators getting some trouble.
Yeah, tell me about Leland Yee. Is there any communist connection there? Geez, Chinese and tied up with the gangs and guns and, well, it's quite a list.
Yeah, well, I don't know specifically much about Leland Yee, but he's in the Asia-Pacific Caucus in the California State Legislature. And he's in there with Warren Furutani and people like that, who are definitely from communist backgrounds. The Asia-Pacific Caucus was basically set up by the hard left. It doesn't mean that every member of it is a leftist, but one would tend to be suspicious based on what Leland Yee has been accused of doing.
Oh, yeah, his affiliations say a lot.
Yeah, I like the fact that he's a hardcore anti-gunner, and yet he was going to get those shoulder-fired rockets from the Muslim Brotherhood. It's like, what?
Well, this is the thing. This is the thing. A lot of people, they see the left do something like promote gun control or, you know, promote a certain social policy, and they think this is because the left believes in that. But that's not the case. It's just being done to weaken the target, to soften you up. They want to take your guns away, not because they don't believe in guns. They love guns. They just want to take your guns away so that they have the guns and you don't. Well, that's the real objective.
And you guys know a lot about that down there, because didn't they take all your guns away here a while back?
Well, they did in Australia. They confiscated heaps of them. But look, we have very restrictive gun rights, gun ownership rules in New Zealand. You have to be a registered owner. If you want to own a handgun, you have to belong to a pistol club for 3 years, and then you can buy a handgun. But you have to keep it at the pistol club. There is no ownership. Private ownership of handguns for carrying or anything like that at all.
No personal protection.
You know, if you want to own a rifle, you have to keep the rifle for hunting. You have to keep the rifle locked in a cupboard. You have to keep the bolt locked in a separate location and the ammunition locked in a third location. So there's no real concept of using guns for self-defense in my country. If you shoot someone, even if they're attacking you, you will probably get prosecuted.
It's unbelievable.
That is that's just a ringing indictment of everything that's going on here.
Yeah, well, you know, you're moving in our direction. We just got there ahead of you, and they want to make the left wants to make you subservient to their wishes, and they have to take away your guns and your cars and your money, anything that makes you independent. You know, they cannot stomach the idea that you will not listen to them and do what they tell you.
Yeah, that's the thing, and they pretend like it's all this big altruistic, you know, the altruistic aims of all of this, that it's a philosophy that they live by. When in reality, it's just all control.
Yeah, it's all about power, all about control, and the rest is just trappings. The rest is just designed to suck in the young and the gullible and the stupid to follow their objectives.
Well,
that is the left.
You know, one thing. Not to get off the subject, but kind of stay on this subject of the Chinese. One of the things you talked about, or one of the things I heard you talking about yesterday on one of your videos, was the Chinese domination in the Pacific. And, you know, it's funny, there was an article on the internet, on MSN, last week about that very thing, how the Chinese are kind of hopscotching across the Pacific and pretty much taking over a lot of the bases and really setting themselves up as the power player. Tell us about that.
Yeah, look, it's absolutely, that is the case. The left has been moving in. The Chinese been moving into the Pacific for some time. They basically have a power base in Fiji now, which is one of the main islands in the Pacific, only 1,500 miles to the north of New Zealand. And they're training the Fijian military. The Chinese are training the Fijian military, building big hydro dams on the islands. They're using business ties to insinuate themselves into all these little island micro-states. Because all these states are broke, so so they come in there and they give them money, they build infrastructure, they bring people in, businesses in, and then they slowly subvert the legislature, they bribe politicians, and they gain influence. Tonga is virtually a Chinese client state now, as are the Cook Islands. They're well on the way. So this is going right through the Pacific. And the more America downgrades its military, the bolder and bolder the Chinese are getting. You know, they want the Pacific as their space. basically is a stepping stone to taking your country.
Exactly, and that is an area that we have, since World War II, we have been pretty much the power player there, correct?
You have, you know, you've been, the 7th Fleet has patrolled that Pacific, and you have kept it as an American lake, so to speak. And most of the people in the Pacific have been very, very glad about that, because they know that if you pull out, the Chinese and even the Japanese will dominate it. And the Chinese are working to do that now with their Blue Water Navy. And so it's a very, very unstable and dangerous situation.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of Americans just have no idea that this is going on.
Right. And the Chinese and the Japanese aren't buddies. And I think you're going to see Japan rearming big time.
Yeah. And this leaves all of you guys completely open. I mean, just wide open.
You know, the Australian Minister of Defence, and if you don't know, Australia is a small island off our west coast. Okay.
okay, we're all good.
Yeah. The Australian Minister of Defence was up in China for talks a couple of years ago, and a top Chinese general publicly embarrassed him. Said, "Now is the time for Australia to choose. You need a godfather. Do you have an American godfather or a Chinese godfather? If you are smart, you will choose China because we are the growing power in the region." You know, they are getting ready to fill the void. If America pulls out, retreats from the Pacific, the Chinese will step in. And they are planning to do that right now, and they're getting a great foothold right now.
Well, and now they've disarmed both you guys and the Australians, so now you're kind of easy pickings.
Yeah, well, Australians still have a military. We have we've got no air force left. Our navy is minimal. We have a reasonably strong army, but that's usually used for United Nations peacekeeping operations. So we have really no defence, no effective defence. Australia has some, but the big player there is Indonesia too. You know, the world's largest Islamic power. If they can be brought in on the side of the Chinese, which the Chinese are trying to do, that will create an unstoppable force. You know, there'll be nothing that will stop them in the Pacific. You know, if the Americans withdraw, the Chinese and the Indonesians will dominate the whole region.
Wow. Well, and so you've done a tremendous amount of research about the inside of our White House and the players in there. And you know, for those of us that have kind of been part of this Tea Party movement for the last 5 years, we've done homework on that. But I mean, were you surprised when Obama got elected the second time?
I wasn't surprised. I was hoping that he wouldn't be, but it didn't surprise me that he was. You know, I thought the Republicans were being a bit too cocky and were taking too many things for granted. They didn't understand the power that the left has with their get-out-the-vote efforts, their vote fraud, their union backing, etc. They don't understand the machine that is the left. And they're playing checkers, and the left are playing chess. So I wasn't completely surprised.
You had a great thing on there, on one of your YouTube videos about the whole union thing. You know, and people feel, you know, they've kind of marginalized the rest of us that see that this is a problem, because it's then, you know, we hate the middle class, and you hear all the stuff they say. Well, what's the actual fact behind the union stuff?
Well, see, in 1995, for a long time in America, your unions were controlled by hardcore anti-communists like Lane Kirkland and George Meany. But in 1995, that was the year that Democratic Socialists of America, your largest Marxist group, took over the union movement, took over the AFL-CIO. And they removed the anti-communist clause from the AFL-CIO's constitution, and the Marxists came flooding back in. They now control every single major labor union in the country, certainly everyone in California. And if you look at Maria Elena Durazzo, for instance, the head of the California AFL-CIO, long-time affiliate of both the Communist Party USA and Democratic Socialists of America, a big-time Obama supporter, a big-time Democrat supporter, and one of the leading Marxists in the state. You know, one of the most powerful women in the state, if not the most powerful woman. So California is a microcosm of what is happening over the entire country, you know, with the exception of probably the right-to-work states.
Right.
That is why the Democrats have moved so far to the left in the last 15 years, because when Democratic Socialists of America took over the unions started mounting a purge against all of the centrist and moderate Democrats, you know, the Joe Liebermans, etc., because all of those Democrats rely on union money and union support to get elected. If the unions take that support away or actively campaign against them, they're toast. So that's how basically the Democrat Party has gone so far to the left, because the Marxists took over the unions in 1995, and they have been exacting their will ever since. And, yeah. And the process is, but what the big thesis in my book is that the big secret of modern communism is the ability of tiny Marxist groups, by controlling the labor unions, to dictate policy to the mainstream political parties. So what I'm saying is, less than 20,000 card-carrying communists in your country, by controlling the labor unions and other organizations, are writing the policies of the Democratic Party and writing the laws that control the lives of 300 million Americans.
You know,
and I stand very much by that.
We have, here in California, we celebrate one of our great labor leaders, Cesar Chavez. Tell us a little bit about the history of old Cesar.
Look, Cesar Chavez, I found some letters just a few days ago in Colorado. They were in the papers of Corky Gonzalez. He was a leading Chicano activist in Colorado. So we go back a little bit. Cesar Chavez worked very closely in his early days with a Communist Party member named Bert Corona. Now, Bert Corona was the man who pioneered the illegal immigration movement in the United States, both in Southern California and right across the Southwest. It was his job to set up illegal immigrants support networks to encourage illegals across the border, get them citizenship and eventual voting rights. And Corona worked very closely with Chavez. Chavez worked closely with Chavez's closest ally, Dolores Huerta, who is very prominent in California, as a member of Democratic Socialists of America. Chavez was also very much in with Democratic Socialists of America, and also trained by Saul Alinsky, the radical Marxist who trained basically Hillary Clinton, and whose disciples trained Mr. Obama. There's a very close tie-up between the Marxist movement around Cesar Chavez and the Marxist movement that spawned Mr. Obama. Very, very close relationship. So what you've got in California, you've got this icon, you've got a Cesar Chavez holiday, and that campaign was organized by Evelina Alarcón, the leader of the Southern California Communist Party based out of Los Angeles. So Chavez was basically a Marxist sympathizer who worked with the communists his entire life. But the other interesting thing is this little letter I found was from a communist in Southern California addressed to Chavez, Dolores Huerta, Bert Corona, and a whole bunch of other very prominent Chicano activists through the Southwest. And the letter was calling on these people to work closely with the Soviet embassy. This is in the 70s, the Soviet embassy, and specifically with a man called Ramesh Chandra, who is a known KGB agent. So this is the kind of coordination that's been going on in your country for a long time. The Chicano movement, the radical Mecha movement, the Aztlan movement, the call for reconquering the Southwest is completely orchestrated by the communist movement with the aim of breaking down and destroying the United States. And the massive union-driven Latino voter registration drives and get out the vote efforts organized by people like Maria Elena Durazzo and her friends Antonio Villagarosa and Gil Cedillo, with the purpose of importing millions of Democrats, Latino Democrats, into California to flip your state completely blue, which they've done, so that they can get control of the electoral college votes of your state, which is hugely important in presidential elections. So this is a big movement in California. Chavez was a key component of it, but he worked very closely with the communists and socialists his entire life.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't think anybody really put it together that there was any communist connection there.
Absolutely there is. Look, 100%. You know, he was very heavily involved with the communists and socialists from the day one, as were people in a circle like Ed Roybal, who was one of your, you know, early Latino congressmen in Los Angeles, and who's the father of... I've forgotten his daughter's name, who's a currently serving congresswoman, Roybal Allard, I think her name is. So, you know, look, California was targeted by the hard left. You know, they control San Francisco, they control Los Angeles. You know, most of the city, Los Angeles City Council are Marxist or socialist, much the same in San Francisco, much the same in many of the big California towns.
Yeah, and that's where the votes are.
Driving their agenda.
Exactly. Hey, Quint, we're going to talk a little bit about Obamacare, and we've got to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about Quentin Young.
Quentin Young.
Yeah, Quentin Young. His connections are just amazing, and how deep that really goes. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's touch on that, and let's jump into some of this Obamacare stuff and how that all happened. Because I think there's a lot there that people don't realize. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in two minutes.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Absolutely. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This is KCNR 1460 AM.
We are
on KCNR 1460.
I'm trying to
What's going on over there? We switched chairs today, and apparently switching chairs was bad. Switching chairs has everything upside down.
It really does. I'm reading off one side, looking at the other side. My mic's in the wrong spot. All I have to do now is spill my coffee on my laptop. I'll be right in there.
I had to be near the door so I could leap out and cough. So you're joining We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We are here live with Trevor Loudon. You can find his information on our website. And he is really the foremost expert at this point of what's going on with the communist force in our country. And for all the people who think that that's just a right-wing fantasy or whatever, we've asked him to kind of go into the background of Obamacare. I think this will help you figure it out. Tomorrow night, Monday night, at the Reading Tea Party meeting at Destiny Fellowship Church, 2570 South Bonneview, Trevor will be speaking live. So,
and he's going to have he'll have his books there, and I highly recommend you folks grab one, because I mean it is a treasure trove. You will not believe the information that he's got in there.
Buy the book or take really good notes.
Take a lot of notes.
Okay, so Trevor, hit us on Obamacare.
Okay, look, there's quite a background to it. Obamacare is really just a transitional stage to single-payer healthcare, to fully government-run. And the left are admitting this, you know, and Jan Schakowsky's admitted it, and Harry Reid's admitted it. This is going to single-payer. Now, what the father of the single-payer healthcare movement in America is a man called Quentin Young. He's a guy pushing 90. He's a retired physician from Chicago. And he's been pushing this for 50 years. He set up Physicians for a National Health Plan, a whole bunch of other organizations. He's worked with John Conyers to get single-payer legislation in front of your Congress on several occasions, but it always got voted down. But with the 2009 Affordable Health Care Act, they finally started to make some progress. And it's not surprising that that came under Mr. Obama, because for many years in Chicago, Quentin Young was Barack Obama's personal physician. And he openly claims credit for indoctrinating Obama into socialized health care. He was his political mentor as well, a personal friend, very, very close. And he claims that Obama was a huge fan of single-payer health care when he was an Illinois state senator and nobody paid any attention to him. But the important thing is this. Quentin Young was a 40-year veteran of the Communist Party USA, hardcore Marxist, until he left that organization to join Democratic Socialists of America, which is the largest Marxist group in your country, a Gramsciist communist group, about 7,000 members. Now, they are the people behind Obamacare. They did it. They've been pushing this for 40 years. They had people on Hillary Clinton's health committees back in the 90s when she tried to get single payer. And they have been promoting it through the AFL-CIO, which they control, through the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is 80 members of your House. That caucus was set up by Democratic Socialists of America. So they have been using this, their vehicles, to promote this for years and years and years. And finally, under Mr. Obama, they got the first foot in the door. And I can go on, the man, the Obama campaign, just to prove the point, the Obama campaign put out a little video before the last election designed to mock Mitt Romney, because they said, hey, Mitt, guess what? You know, the joke's on you. You hate Obamacare. You want to get rid of it. But the man who designed it for us is John McDonough. He's the architect of it, a former Massachusetts state legislator and academic. And then they go on to say, well, guess what, Mitt? It was also John McDonough that designed Romney Care. And he did. John McDonough designed both systems. But what they don't say is that John McDonough was the Boston chairman of Democratic Socialists of America. So a member of Democratic Socialists of America designed Obamacare. The same organization promoted it to the Progressive Caucus, Physicians for a National Health Plan, and the AFL-CIO. And another member of the same group, Quentin Young, personally indoctrinated your president into it. So these people have been controlling the narrative. And they're on the verge of socializing between one-sixth and one-quarter of your economy, wrecking the best healthcare system the world has ever known, and basically getting millions and millions of Americans totally dependent on the state for their healthcare, which is a dream of every socialist.
Now, do you think the labor unions are going to have a little heartburn over having to go by the same rules as everybody else now, because they were basically lied to on this whole Obamacare thing? Now their health plan isn't as sweet as it used to be, and I know they're not happy about that. What do you think the stance is going to be?
Well, look, the leaders don't care. The leaders will be looked after. They don't care what happens to their own members, so they will just keep their members in line and tell them what to do, and everybody's going to get worse health care, because the health care is not the aim. The healthcare is nothing. What is the aim? Is controlling people.
Exactly.
I'll give you a very good example of how cynical the unions are. You think about the immigration issue. Now, the man leading that right now, the man who's filled in for Bert Corona, is Alessio Medina, a member of Democratic Socialists of America, a former member of Obama's Latino Advisory Committee, and a supporter of the Communist Party. He is leading the immigrants' rights movement in this country right now. He is the one that got the bill pushed through the Senate, and he's been using his union comrades, he was a leader of SEIU until recently, to get Republicans to flip their vote to get a bill through the House. he openly admitted, and I've got him on tape, that the whole reason he's doing this is to get 8 million more Democratic Party votes, which will turn Texas blue, which will basically combine, you combine the Electoral College votes of Texas with those of California, which they've already got, that will give the Democrats a one-party state, because the Republicans can never win another presidential election after that.
No, they're not gone. Yeah, they're not fooling anybody with that whole immigration sweep, because that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, they are fooling a lot of Republicans, but the point of this is, you think about it, 20 years ago, which organization in America was leading the charge against illegal immigration?
Labor,
it was the unions.
Labor unions.
The
yeah.
unions were constantly lobbying Congress to increase penalties on any employer caught employing illegal aliens, because they saw illegal immigrants as unfair competition for union members. They would drive wages and conditions down and take away jobs.
So they were actually fighting for the workers at that point.
Yeah, because now in 2014, it's the unions who are leading the charge to legalize illegal immigrants. It's the unions driving it. And the reason for it is this, because before 1995, the unions were there to represent the interest of their members. After 1995, when they were taken over by Democratic Socialists of America, they were there to promote socialist revolution. So, you know, the unions are happy to sell out the wages and conditions of their own members, have no problem with it, because the revolution is more important.
Wow.
And all these union members who are paying their union dues do not realize their communist union bosses are selling them out and are quite happy to do so.
So what about the folks on the fringe who, you know, they're Democrats and they want clean air and clean water and, you know, they fall for, are they just the useful idiots that we've read about, or, I mean?
Well, pretty much, you know, the environmental movement is pretty much controlled by the left, you know. Most of these people, like most union members, have no idea how they're being manipulated. Most Democrats have no understanding that their party has been taken over by Marxists. Most of the black population has no understanding that the NACP, NAACP, and Al Sharpton and people like that are manipulating and controlling them for Marxist ends. This is the old game, you know. Marxists take over organizations and they manipulate the masses to get power. And the same in the environmental movement and the same in most of the other so-called social movements. These are all controlled by Marxists. And the people are just there to pay the money and do what they're told.
So I guess it kind of begs the question. Okay, so if you're part of something like this, because I know that there are people who listen to our show who just, you know, would like to just come and wring our necks. And I'm sorry. And I'm sorry for them. because we're right and they're not. But so for those folks, what's a good litmus test for them to take a look at their own organization and get a clue?
Well, you know, is their organization supporting the Constitution? Is it supporting, you know, things like gun rights and freedom of speech, or is it supporting more government control? If it's supporting more government control, more centralization, more basic, yeah, more socialism in a way, if it's moving in that direction, get out of it. And that includes your churches, by the way, too, because there's a whole bunch of churches that are very much under the control of the left. And so, you know, is it supporting the Constitution? Is it supporting individual liberty, individual freedom, individual responsibility? Or is it supporting increased government control, more regulation, more taxes, more centralized people telling you what to do? It's not hard to figure out which organization is heading in which direction.
I think that's cool because, I know you went into a Common Core in one of your videos, and I have a coworker whose daughter's in the eighth grade, and she had to take a a beta version of a standardized test. I guess she's homeschooled, but they still have to take some of these things.
Yeah.
So, they pull 100 kids or whatever, give them the test, and look at how the test performs and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, kid came home and said, it was really weird on that test today. Her mom's like, well, how'd it go? And it was kind of there's a weird question on there. It actually said, the Affordable Care Act passed by President Obama was done to help all Americans. ABC, NBC, CBS, and I think it said CNN, but I could be wrong there. I'll stick with the three I know. ABC, NBC, and CBS all did great coverage of the Affordable Care Act to help Americans. Only Fox News aired negative things about the bill and discouraged people from supporting it. Do you think Fox News should be forced to apologize? That was the question.
Unbelievable.
On an eighth grade standardized test.
And look, if I didn't know Common Core and where the whole of materials, I wouldn't believe that. But I do believe it because I've seen. Common Core is not teaching people how to think; it's teaching people what to think.
Yep,
it is. And we've had a similar concept in my country for more than 12 years now. We call it unit standards in my country, and it's basically the compartmentalization of knowledge. So you are taught like monkeys to perform little tasks on command and think little thoughts on command, and you are ticked off or given a banana every time you do the thing your instructors tell you to do. It's not teaching any degree of critical thinking or, classical education is you learn the basics, you learn maths, you learn English, you learn grammar, you learn spelling, punctuation, you learn how to think. This is the exact opposite. This is compartmentalizing knowledge into little boxes which are predetermined to have certain outcomes to make you think in a certain way, and you get rewarded if you think in that way. This is just massive child abuse.
This is
child abuse on an unimaginable scale.
Well, I just thought it was, actually when they do stuff that's that flagrant, it kind of blows my mind. It's like that's not very subtle.
That's Nazi Germany stuff. If you'd put Jews in there instead of Fox News, you'd think it was Nazi propaganda, wouldn't you?
Oh, exactly.
Demonizing a certain sector. The majority is right. Stick with the majority. Demonize this minority, and you will be part of the happy collective. That's the whole message of this.
The pinnacle
pinnacle
of social engineering. I mean, it's their dream. And speaking of education, I'm gonna jump around here today
segue,
because we've got
Bill.
So much to cover.
Bill took notes on your video. It's totally messing up our flow.
It is too. There's so many things I want people to hear from you. And,
what about this? All right, what do you got?
With Obama, quite a while back there was a big flap about his relationship with Frank Marshall Davis, and they kind of swept that under the rug, that he was really just, not a big deal. But after listening to you yesterday, that really was a big deal. His background was shocking. Talk to the folks about him and Huey DeLacy and that whole connection. I mean, it blows my mind that somebody with those kind of connections could get to where Barry got.
And we're not allowed to say it.
Yeah, we're not supposed to tell anybody.
Yeah, it was just the start of it, Obama was mentored as a young man from about the age of 10 to 17 or 18 by a hardcore pro-Soviet communist. Frank Marshall Davis was on the FBI security index. That means that he would have been arrested had war ever broken out with the Soviet Union. The FBI was watching him. They saw him taking photographs of all sorts of obscure beaches around Hawaii. And as Hawaii was a very important military post, I think they were suspecting him of military espionage, getting the lie of the land. So that's Frank Marshall Davis. Frank Marshall Davis worked in the same organization as a man called Hugh de Lacy. Hugh de Lacy was a Communist Party member in Washington State. He was also a Democrat, got himself elected to Congress for 2 years after World War II. Then he moved to California, was a radical activist in the Santa Cruz area, where he befriended a young up-and-coming Democrat called Leon Panetta, who basically got into Congress. Panetta and de Lacy used to correspond all the time on defense issues. Panetta would get de Lacy defense documents for his use. De Lacy, at the same time, was corresponding with at least five known former, and I put former in inverted commas, Soviet spies. Two of them were at the time living in communist China, one of them working directly for the Chinese spy agency. So you had a covert communist in California working closely with Leon Panetta, who would later become both your Secretary of Defense and head of your CIA. And de Lacy was connected to Frank Marshall Davis through an organization called a communist organization called Committee for the Protection of Foreign Born, which incidentally was one of their main jobs was protecting people like Harry Bridges, the communist labor leader out of San Francisco. It's basically to stop them being deported. So you have these networks that have been going for a long time in America. And I'll just go another little thing. Frank Marshall Davis started his communist career in Chicago. He was very active in the Chicago Communist Party in the late 1940s. There he worked with a young man very closely, a young communist called Vernon Jarrett. Now, Vernon Jarrett just happens to be the father-in-law of Valerie Jarrett, who is now Obama's right-hand woman in the White House, the most powerful woman in America. Both of them can trace their political heritage back, Obama and Jarrett, to the Chicago Communist Party of the 1940s. But it gets even better. David Axelrod, the other half of Obama's brain, the man who got him elected twice, was mentored by a man called David Cantor. Mentored and guided in his political career over several years by David Cantor. David Cantor was a Chicago Communist Party member. He'd grown up in the Soviet Union. His communist father took him over there as a young man. The communist father, Harry Cantor, was employed by Stalin to translate Lenin's works from Russian into English, which for a communist is like being allowed to translate the Bible effectively. And so in Harry Cantor, in 1948, bought a little communist publication off its owner. It was called the Chicago Star. So Harry Cantor buys this communist publication, and the reason that the owner was selling it was because he was moving to Hawaii, because that was Frank Marshall Davis. So, you know, all three of those people in the White House, you know, Valerie Jarrett, David Axelrod, and Obama, can all trace their political heritage back to Frank Marshall Davis and the Chicago Communist Party, and before that, to the Soviet Union. You know, David Cantor, who mentored Axelrod, was once a paid Soviet agent. He was paid by the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C. to disseminate communist propaganda and Soviet literature all over the country. The U.S. State Department required David Cantor to register as a Soviet agent. You know, he was the one who led the big propaganda campaign against Barry Goldwater, the conservative icon in the 1964 presidential elections. David Cantor was one of the main people slandering Barry Goldwater, a Soviet agent, a paid agent of the Soviet Union, basically helped to destroy your presidential candidate that year. And that man went on to train Axelrod, the man who got your president elected, basically by destroying his opposition, by trying to destroy Mitt Romney, by destroying Jack Ryan, the congressman, the senator who stood against, the man who stood for the Senate against Obama in Chicago, etc. That's Axelrod's modus operandi, destroying his opposition, character assassinating his opposition, and he learned that from David Cantor, who helped to destroy Barry Goldwater on Soviet, you know, basically on Soviet instructions, I would say. So this goes deep. It goes really deep.
Unbelievable.
And now he's the mayor of Chicago.
Now he's, no, it's Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, Rahm Emanuel, sorry. That's right, Axelrod's back doing the other thing
look,
again.
Look, it's everywhere you look, you know. There's, people like, you know, both Eric Holder, for instance, and Mr. Obama, they both owe their jobs to a man called Percy Sutton. Now, Percy Sutton was the Manhattan Borough President, and he mentored Eric Holder. He got Eric Holder started, but he also wrote the letter that got Obama into Harvard, basically to help an agent of the Saudi prince to get Obama into Harvard. But Percy Sutton came from a San Antonio family. There were 12 kids, and 6 of them were Communist Party members. 6 of them. And Percy Sutton spent his entire life in Communist Party France and worked with Charlie Rangel and other communists in New York to build a power base there. So that goes back to San Antonio, the Communist Party there, and that movement spawned the Castro brothers, who are active in democratic politics in Texas. You know, one of them is the mayor of San Antonio, and one of them's a congressman. They came from the same roots that Percy Sutton came out of. So this network goes deep all over the country. The hard left have been burrowing away in your country for decades to get their people into positions of power. And Obama is just their crowning glory. He's not their only one, but he is their crowning glory.
And isn't it amazing that so much of this was spawned in Chicago? I mean, we talk about Chicago politics, but this is mind-blowing.
Look, Chicago was the headquarters of the Communist Party. You know, that's where it was set up. And Chicago was hard left even in the 1840s, because when Karl Marx instigated an unsuccessful communist revolution in Germany in 1848, his Marxist followers, after that failed, they fled to the United States, and a whole bunch of them settled in Chicago. So Chicago had those Marxist roots going back to the 1840s.
Jeez. Well, it's someone in the chat room wanted to know if a politician is anti-Second Amendment, for us, that's an automatic deal breaker, but she wanted to know what you thought.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much an automatic deal breaker, you know. The only reason you have any amendments left at all in your country now is because you have a Second Amendment. You know, it really is. You would have no freedom left at all now if you didn't have that Second Amendment. So if a politician doesn't stand up hardcore for your gun rights, he or she is not worthy of support. No matter how good they may be on other issues, the economy or whatever, if they don't support that, don't support them.
Trevor, we have to take a hard break here at top of the hour, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the military and why the cuts are coming the way they're coming, and what this all means, and where that all kind of started. You're listening to We the People Radio, 1460 AM, and we'll be back in 5 minutes. Everybody, you're listening to We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM. If you would like to join the chat, the number is 530-605-4567.
No, that's if you want to use your phone.
Oh, that's the phone. That's what I meant.
Wow, switching chairs is brutal.
It is.
You can join us online at We the People Radio.
I'm in the captain's chair, and I'm faking
US.
It.
We're on with Trevor Loudon, and he's got hotels to check out of, lunch to eat, planes to catch, and he's on his way to Reading. So we don't know how long we've got him. So, in your last throes here with us.
I'll be on for a bit longer.
Okay, cool. What do you think about this whole military mess?
Yeah, well, look, what I talk about is the biggest, the destruction of the United States military has always been the goal of the left, of the Communist Party, etc., because they know if they can take out your military, their friends in Russia and China and Cuba, etc., will rule this planet. That's their goal. They've always been trying to destroy your military. And Obama has been involved with pro-Soviet Marxists his entire career, from Frank Marshall Davis in Hawaii to Alice Palmer and Quentin Young in Chicago and many, many more. And so it's no surprise that the first thing Obama really did was to attack, you know, really he has done more to damage your military than any other president. You know, when sequestration came on, I think the military, which is 20% of your federal spending, is taking about 90% of the cuts. And this is perfectly in line with what Obama was taught as a young man. And as that happens, the Russians are getting bolder and bolder and more aggressive. The Chinese are building a blue water navy and getting more aggressive in the Pacific. The Iranians are getting much more aggressive in the Middle East. Most of Africa is now under Chinese control. Most of Latin America is under communist control. And Obama wants to cut your military even further. You know, he wants to cut your nuclear arsenal to 265 nuclear weapons when the Russians alone have more than 6,000 that we know about and probably many more that we don't. Jeez. So, you know, where is this going to go? You know, like, to me, the most important thing your president said in his entire first term of office was when he was caught off mic in South Korea with Dmitry Medvedev, the then Russian president.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Medvedev, when I get reelected, I'll have more flexibility to deal with you. Yes, said Obama. Yes, said Medvedev, I understand. I will pass your message on to Vladimir. We are with you. Well, how much more blatant do you need to get?
Yeah, gee, what do you mean by that?
How much more of a warning does America need?
Yeah, well, and you have just so many people that just refuse to believe that. I don't even know what you do with that.
I'll give you another little bit of interesting information. There's a man called Mark Rudd, who's a former math teacher from Albuquerque. Now, nobody's ever heard of Mark Rudd unless you study 1970s terrorism, because he was one of the top members of the Weather Underground, right up there with Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn in the leadership of seven people, one of the top people. He popped up again in 2006 and 2007 with Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn in an organization called Movement for a Democratic Society. That spawned another group called Progressives for Obama, which Mark Rudd supported. So Mark Rudd knows people like Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, who personally know your president, have worked with him for years and years and years. Now, just after the first election, 2008, Obama appointed a few conservatives to positions in the defense establishment. And the right sort of thought, oh, this is all right, Obama, maybe he's going to be a moderate after all. But the left were going daft. They were going crazy about this. And Mark Rudd's inbox was filling up with emails from people saying, oh, look, what's Obama doing? We elected this guy. What's he putting people into the conservatives, into the military for? That's the last thing we need. We're so disgusted. And Mark Rudd knew he had to settle the comrades down. So he wrote a little article, printed it online. This is only 2 weeks after the election. And this is what he said. The guts of what he said was this. Don't worry, comrades. It's all right. Obama understands that he can't tackle the military now. It's too dangerous. Congress would rebel and the people would rebel. We have to wait 2 or 3 years into this recession. And when the recession is really biting, then we can start to cut military spending. So what happened? Two or three years into the recession, when people were all worried about their jobs and keeping their mortgages paid and keeping the IRS off their back, that's when sequestration came, that's when the military cuts started coming, and that's when Obama started to gut your military. Just on cue. Totally on cue.
Well, and
you know, this was planned out. This was the number one item on the left's agenda. They don't care how bad the economy gets, the worse it gets. As long as they can get Obama, the Democrats reelected, they don't care how bad the economy gets, because the worse it gets, the more the American public will tolerate the destruction of their military, because that is the number one target. Because you can come back from losing some of your freedoms. You've done that before. You can come back from a depression. You've done that before. But have you ever been in the position before when your commander-in-chief is basically destroying your main means of defense while your enemies have never been stronger for years? Russia, China, Iran have never been stronger. And your president, who's worked with communists his entire life, is now destroying your military just on cue. Could this be a coincidence?
Yeah, no, there's no coincidence there. And I think I just can't believe people don't see that. I mean, when you look at what's happening with all these, you know, particularly with China and Russia and their militaries and their economies, and now we're cutting our military, it makes no sense. No sense at all.
Well, no sense if you're pro-American. But if you're not, it makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah, they're happy as they can be.
Well, and what they do is they drag in all the, you know, the peace thing. You did a great job on one of your videos about the whole peace movement and how that was co-opted into all this.
The peace movement wasn't co-opted. The peace movement was started by the communists, has always been controlled by the communists, and is still controlled by the communists. It was never co-opted. It was initiated by the communists.
But people all thought that it was, you know, that, you know, a lot of people think that it's about peace, which it isn't.
It's just a lie. It's a complete lie. It's just like Obamacare is supposed to be about health, but it isn't.
Yeah, no.
You know, immigration reform is supposed to be about fairness and justice, but it isn't. You know, they're all about control. The peace movement is totally about destroying your military. You know, Alice Palmer, the woman who got Obama his first job in politics, basically in Chicago, she was an Illinois state senator, was a long-time peace activist. She was on the board of the U.S. Peace Council alongside 17 members of the Communist Party USA. She was also involved with the World Peace Council, the major Soviet front of the time, which still exists, and she was actively involved in that. Plus, she was head of another Soviet front, the International Organization of Journalists. She went to the Soviet Union at least four times that I know about through the 80s. And then she got your president his first job in politics. And guess what he's doing? Just what the peace movement wants, destroying your military. Could this be a coincidence?
Well, is there any way they could come back and say, gosh, we didn't know that the communists were involved in these organizations. We were duped, too.
Well, yeah, there'd be some, yeah, of course there's some low-level peace activists who'd be duped. Absolutely there are. But the top of all of these organizations, United for Peace and Justice, Peace Action, all of them, every single one of them are controlled by communists, people like Judith LeBlanc. Judith LeBlanc is a field operator for Peace Action, the biggest peace movement in your country, hundreds of thousands of members. She is the field director. She is also a leader of the Communist Party USA's Peace and Solidarity Commission, the body that coordinates peace movement activity. She used to be one of the top people of United for Peace and Justice, which was led by Leslie Kagan, a long-time pro-Cuban Marxist. I could go through all of these peace movements and point out dozens and dozens of members of the Communist Party USA, Freedom Socialist Organization, Democratic Socialists of America, Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, Workers' World Party, and other Marxist groups. They are lock, stock, and barrel controlled by the communists, 100%.
Well, you see them at these, I don't know if you do, but we see him at these rallies and stuff in the bigger cities, and they're marching along with big banners that say that they're all communists. And when did that stop being a bad thing? I must have missed
something. Well, it stopped being a bad thing when the Communist Party coined the term McCarthyism, and they used that to terrorize anybody who dared to challenge them. And it's basically as the so-called collapse of communism in the 1980s, which was really just a managed retreat. It was certainly not a collapse. You know, today's young kids, you know, they've never been educated on communism. The only things they know about it are cool T-shirts with Che Guevara on them, and that it's really cool to be hip and a rebel. That's all they know. They don't understand it's the worst totalitarian system that's ever existed, and has enslaved and killed millions and millions of people. They have no conception of it.
Yeah, they don't have any background. No history in any of that. Hey, on one of your talks you gave, you talked about going to one of the big communist conventions, and you know you paid your way, you went in, and you actually got bored with what they were talking about. Tell the folks what they were talking about.
Okay, well, that was last year. I went to the Institute for Policy Studies 50th Anniversary Bash in Washington, D.C. Now, the Institute for Policy Studies is basically the ideas factory of the American left and the Obama administration. These are hardcore progressives. They've been going for 50 years. In the 80s, they used to work with the Soviet KGB. Now they work with the Cubans. These are hardcore progressives. So I went to their conference because I wanted to know what they were thinking. I put on my badge, I paid my $75, and I mingled with the Marxists all day. You know?
Okay, comrade.
I wanted to know what they were thinking, you know, what's on their agenda. And as I said, I got bored because all I talked about all day, virtually to the exclusion of everything else, was the Tea Party. Tea Party this, Tea Party that, Tea Party this. They took the state legislatures away. They've taken over the county commissions. They've undone all our work. This is going to take us years to get back what they took off us. How did we not see this coming? They took us by surprise. How do we stop them? All day long, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party. And I got sick of it. You know, Tea Party movement has to realize, you're like baby Superman. You do not know your own strength. You know, and I'll say this very bluntly. Look, that immigration bill would have gone through the House this session had the Republicans not been terrified of what the Tea Party did to Marco Rubio and is about to do to Lindsey Graham. They are terrified of you. And you got to think about it this way. You know, the Tea Party, I talk to them all the time. They, oh, you know, are we making a difference? And, you know, is it worth carrying on? And this kind of thing. So, look, if you hadn't done what you did in 2010, if you hadn't put some spine into the GOP and taken back the House, the entire agenda of the left would be in now. Card check, cap and trade, green jobs, Obamacare would be locked in, and those 8, 10, 12 million illegal votes would be with the Democrats in this election right now. You'd be screwed, folks.
Yeah,
the country would be done.
We would.
You know, opinions, I'm sure.
Yeah. the Tea Party saved America. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. A lot of the Tea Party folks, they do not understand this because you're in the fight. You don't see the big picture. But if you look at it from outside, had you not done that in 2010, the entire agenda of the left would be locked in now and you would have no way back. Tea Party gave America a second chance.
It's kind of funny because
that's pretty impressive. That deserves a huge round of applause in my book.
Good job, all you people out there that felt like it wasn't making a difference.
Great job. You know, great job.
Yeah.
A bunch of amateurs and novices. A bunch of amateurs and novices who came out of nowhere, snuck up on the left and took their toys away. And that's pretty cool. That's why they hate you folks, because they had it in the bag. 40 years of work, 40 years of burrowing, those 60s revolutionaries who'd been burrowing through your unions and your Democratic Party and your media and your universities, they finally, in 2008, had their ducks in a row. They had the House, they had the Senate, and they had their man in the White House. Their agenda was all written out, and they were going to take down Middle America. They were going to take down the great Satan. And if you Tea Party folk hadn't stepped up, they would have. They would have done it.
America owes
a huge debt of gratitude to the Tea Party.
We could kind of feel it at the time. Hey, Trevor, we've got a question for you on, I don't know, some line. Hey, Mark, are you in there?
Yes, I am.
You're on.
How are you?
We're super.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Thanks for having me on. I would like to say that your guest is absolutely correct in every single thing he says. I've been flying airplanes in support of 5 or 6 wars for the United States government as a civilian military contractor. I've seen communism and socialism fail everywhere in the world that's been tried. It is nothing more than cultural Marxism trying to build a progressive society on the ashes of the Constitution and our Judeo-Christian values, and he's absolutely correct about all of it.
Well, thanks, Mark. You know, it's nice to get the validation. And look, it's playing out now in America, but the good news is, with the Tea Party and the 912s and Glenn Beck and people like that, there are more people who have woken up to what the Constitution really means and are willing to fight for it now than there have been for decades. So that is our hope.
And I think also you can, when you look at what the media is saying about the Tea Party and how they're trying to manufacture this this fight between the right and the Tea Party, they know the Tea Party is a threat, and they're going to say whatever they want just to try to break up that threat. And the Tea Party is alive and well. I mean, when you listen to the media, we've been kind of downplayed and, you know, we're breaking up and we're fighting amongst ourselves. That's not correct. I mean, if anybody goes to a Tea Party meeting, that is just a falsehood. The Tea Party is as strong as it ever has been, and I think going into this next election, it's going to get even stronger.
Look, I agree, Mark, and the left is terrified of you. That's why they denigrate you, why they try and slander you. If you weren't effective, they would ignore you. Simple as that.
Exactly.
Sorry, Mark, you were trying to say something in there.
Part of the fight we're in is with establishment politicians who, and apparently a Redding County supervisor just said this the other day to one of the Jefferson followers, that the Constitution is so vague it's unenforceable and it's really a philosophical document. I had a conversation with a fairly conservative, very well-respected attorney here in Siskiyou County just the other day, and he said the same thing. Well, you know, the Constitution only worked for a few people a long time ago. It's really philosophical in nature, and what we need a socialist British system in place in this country. So there are a lot of supposedly good conservative Republicans who are drinking the Kool-Aid, and that's part of the fight we're in too. And thank God for the Tea Party, and thank God for people who can read the Constitution in plain English and see that it is the only document capable of saving us and saving this country.
Yeah. Look, the American Constitution is a guiding light for every freedom lover around the planet. All over this planet, we are so jealous of what you have. We don't have a Second Amendment in my country. We don't have a First Amendment. We have none of that. And if the American Constitution is lost, its freedom will be diminished everywhere. Everywhere on this planet. You know, that's a light. It's a light that cannot be allowed to be extinguished. And that's why freedom lovers all over the world are so concerned about what's happening in America. Because if you lose it, we lose everything. If you guys can take back your constitution and restore your liberty and restore your government to the tiny size it's supposed to be, that's going to inspire freedom movements all over the planet.
Well,
so everything depends on what happens in America in the next couple of years.
Well, there's a reason that the American Constitution and Bill of Rights has been the blueprint for other countries that are trying to, you know, get their republic together, and it's because it works, and it's the best one out there.
Yeah. What other constitution has lasted for 200 years? You know, around the, you know, it's unique. It's a unique document. And if people say it's vague and ineffective, you know, the two First Amendments, freedom of speech and freedom and the right to keep and bear arms, those are the mainstays of your liberty. You know, they have kept you free for 200 years. So how can anyone say they are vague and nebulous or, you know, whatever? How can anybody even contemplate saying that?
Well, I think
they're
a lot of it...
They're specific, they're well-worded, and they have been... The left have been trying to overturn both of them for 200 years and haven't succeeded yet.
Well,
so that's pretty cool, I think.
It's hard to follow. I mean, you're always going to have people. I mean, it's human nature that if you can't really make it work in your little world, you want to change it, and those changes will make it better for everybody. You know, and that's where people go wrong.
Well, on our side of the fence,
if we have a personal character flaw, it's our job to fix it.
Exactly.
You know, it's our responsibility. On the left side of the fence, if they have a personal character flaw, they want to make everybody else like them.
Right.
That's the difference. That's the big difference.
I think also the green agenda plays a big part in this, because part of the green progressive agenda, which is also the communist agenda, is to impoverish us. And Joseph Stalin once said, in the end, they will crawl to you on their hands and knees, and they will beg you to make them slaves as long as you feed them. And their goal is to turn us economically into a third world country. And believe you me, I've been to every third world country on earth, and what I see is that poverty is fatal, and that poverty will cause someone to do anything simply to survive and to feed his family. And so the thought of liberty, the thought of justice, the thought of defending the defenseless, the thought of standing for what's right, that goes right out the window when your children's stomachs are extended because they don't have enough to eat and you're forced to burn garbage for fuel. And that is the goal of the green agenda, to impoverish the country and reduce us to third world status. And they're winning. They're winning. We need to fight. We're in the fight
exactly.
of our lives right
they,
now.
They accuse us of advocating dog-eat-dog capitalism. Nothing is more dog-eat-dog than socialism, because you have to struggle and rip off your friends and everybody else just to survive. That's what you have to do.
Well, these folks
will
fight for
the American system. The American system is the most benevolent system in the world. Americans are the biggest charitable givers, the most community-minded people in the world, because they have the affluence to have the time to do these things.
And I think a lot of the folks that fight for this socialist view have never lived or experienced the true outcome of a total socialist government.
No, they haven't. But even if some of them did, they wouldn't care as long as they were running it.
Well, if they're running it, but they have to live under it, they wouldn't.
It's better to rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Exactly.
They don't care how bad the country gets as long as they're running it.
Well, and I think also people need to remember that the largest cause of death in the 20th century was socialist and communist governments killing their own people. I mean, that kind of thing doesn't occur here because it theoretically couldn't under constitutional law. But in most of the world, that's an accepted form of control. It's just simply murdering a few hundred thousand of your own people or a few million of your own people. And it's typically fascist, communist, and socialist governments that engage in that practice.
Well, you remember Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground terrorist, who was Obama's best friend in Chicago for years. Back in the 70s, when Larry Grathwohl, the FBI informant inside the Weather Underground, was talking to him, Ayers seriously discussed when they ruled America, they would have to eliminate approximately 25 million Americans who wouldn't go along. That was seriously discussed in their circles.
Unbelievable.
So this would happen in America if people like that got power.
And Bill Ayers is a buddy of the president, and Bill Ayers is also a friend of the Environmental Greens in Siskiyou County. One of the guys that he's buddies with is Petey Brucker. We call him the president of the Salmon River Pot Growers Association. So these things are all tied together, and people need to realize that, and they need to wake up, and they need to start the fight.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't agree more, Mark.
We're going to take one more real quick break here. You're listening to We the People Radio, and thanks for calling in, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
And we'll
be
back.
I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
You bet. And we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Come back with music from the era where they were really indoctrinating everybody into communism, but the lyrics are good. Fight the power. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And all our archives, including this program in a couple hours, everything's on there. You've got a great webpage there that Robert put together all about our guest, Trevor Loudon, his books. And we want to make sure that people know Trevor is speaking live in Reading at 6 p.m. tomorrow at Destiny Fellowship Church.
Hi.
At the Tea Party meeting.
What's check out time?
Oh, Trevor's checking out of his hotel. We're going to get the blow-by-blow on this. So anyway, make sure you join us. He's headed back to New Zealand after that, I believe.
I think he's talking to housekeeping.
He is. He's talking to the hotel people. He's finding out what
checkout. Yeah, look, I was talking to you. The checkout's at 12. I thought it was 11. So
it's okay. We're like stalkers. We're just like listening. We're like the NSA. We're listening into everything you do.
That's you can't hide from us.
We are everywhere.
If they can do it, why can't you?
Absolutely. Hey, you know, we kind of buzzed over Valerie Jarrett, and she's a character that really shouldn't be short. You know, we shouldn't short sell the connections there. You want to do a little Valerie Jarrett monologue?
Well, you call her the second most powerful, or the most powerful woman in government today, and of course,
yeah.
Most people would think it's Michelle, but
in some ways,
it's not.
I think she's more powerful than Obama in some ways.
Yeah, I do too.
I think there's very little he does that doesn't go past Valerie Jarrett. So you know, like it's just basically, you know. She's a very powerful woman. She has supposedly introduced Obama and Michelle, back in the 90s. So she's been following their path the entire thing. But what you've got to look at is her family background. As I explained, her late father-in-law was a Communist Party member, but also her maternal grandfather, Robert Bowman. He was the first black head of the Chicago Housing Authority, but he also worked in communist fronts in the 1930s and 40s as well, including some with Frank Marshall Davis. So she's got communism on both sides of her family, and her mother, Valerie Jarrett's mother, is Barbara Bowman. She runs She runs an educational institute out of Chicago. And I've just forgotten the guy's name, but he was the guy, Eric Erickson, I think it was. He was the guy who coined the term identity crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And Erickson was a Marxist professor at Berkeley. He was actually kicked out of Berkeley because he refused to sign an anti-communist loyalty oath. And he also was involved with the California Labor School, which was a Communist Party school in California. So she named her institute after a well-known communist activist. On the board of that institute have served Bernadine Dorn, the wife of Weather Underground terrorist Bill Ayers, and also Tom Ayers, the father of Bill Ayers. So, and Barbara Bowman has done work in early childhood education all over the United States. She's very influential in that area. And in 2009, President Obama gave her an award for her work. And that award ceremony was very prominently featured in the pages of the Communist Party USA's People's World. So Valerie Jarrett comes from a family steeped in Marxism and communism.
Absolutely steeped
in it.
She's
a good comrade. She was very active in radical causes when she was at university at Stanford, etc. So she is one of the crew. You know, she's definitely one of the crew, and she has Obama's ear on virtually everything.
What is her official position? What is she supposed to be?
Advisor.
Okay.
You know, that's as specific as it gets. But she's his best friend, confidant, mentor, and I would say handler. I think she handles Obama, keeps him on the straight and narrow, keeps him on track, keeps him on message. That's what I think.
He just got loose when he was having selfies down at the funeral. You know, Valerie wasn't there, and he turns into a 12-year-old.
Yeah, well, that's right. When Auntie Valerie's not there, he can get a bit more mischievous. But basically, I think Valerie would keep him under a pretty tight rein.
Yeah, and so what do you think their ultimate, if they have their way in the next, so now we're going to play fortune teller, in the next, few years, what do you think their ultimate end, the realistic ultimate end of their plan would be?
Well, American sovereignty has to be destroyed, because if you're going to have a socialist planet, you can't have a free America. America's the number one stumbling block. So basically, they're going to degrade America's economy, destroy state sovereignty, indoctrinate the children, and use the illegal immigrants to get a one-party Democratic Party state controlled by the communists and the Marxists. There will still be a Republican Party for a while anyway, just to make it look like you have a functioning democracy. So they will, basically, the Chinese will move into the western half. They'll buy up chunks of California and Idaho and Washington State. They'll get a foothold. America will be internationalized, and your sovereignty will be destroyed. If that doesn't work, they will take you out militarily. They will actually attack you. Russia and China have plans for doing that right now. So either way, the plan is to destroy America as it is now, either through political, economic, and subversive methods, or straight-out military attack.
And that's pretty frightening when you think about it. I mean, with the state of our military right now and the cuts that are coming, I work with a fellow right now who was a customer of ours who just got a big contract on one of the local military bases, and he is building storage pads right now for all the military supplies, hardware, that sort of thing, that's coming back from Iraq or from Afghanistan, and pretty much around North America, that is being mothballed. And he said the amount of pads that he's building will keep him busy for probably the next year or two. And you think about that, and That's all hardware that's coming out of the field and just basically going into mothballs. And that's not easily put back into action.
Well, look, you know, America has built hardly any new nuclear weapons since 1992. You know, the shelf life of them is 15 to 20 years. Your nuclear arsenal is being destroyed through attrition. You know, Obama has done nothing to upgrade it or, you know, keep it in working order. So that's another way you've been taken down. But you know, do you want to hear the Russian-Chinese plan for taking out America militarily if it comes to it?
Sure.
Well, this came from Stanislav Lunev, who was the deputy head of Russian military intelligence in your country, who defected in 1998. This is way, way after the so-called collapse of communism. He said that if it comes to the crunch, and they thought they could win this war 15 years ago, they thought they could win it then, what Russia's got, they've got a very unreliable army. They've got far too many drunks and far too many Muslims, but they do have a huge nuclear arsenal. China, their partner, and China and Russia are working together, believe me. They are allied in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a military, economic, and political pact, like the old Warsaw Pact. Now, China doesn't have so many nukes, but they have a huge surplus of young men. Because of the one-child policy and aborting all the baby girls, they've got at least 30 million young men who will never marry. And that's a big social problem. They know that's going to blow up in their face if they're not careful. So if it comes to war, this is what they'll do. Russia will nuke the continental United States, absolutely hammer it in a surprise attack, maybe with EMP weapons as well. They will invade Alaska and parts of Canada and stop at the border. The Chinese will send wave after wave after wave after wave of troops across the Pacific. They know they will lose 10, 20, 30 million men, but that's fine because they were surplus anyway. They wanted to get rid of them. They will get a foothold on the States and start invading. Meanwhile, the Cubans and Nicaraguans and Venezuelans will be invited up into the southern United States for looting rights. That is the plan. Then the Chinese will occupy America. They have every aquifer in the United States mapped out now because they know that certain aquifers flush out nuclear radiation very quickly and other aquifers hold it for a long time. So they have to know exactly where they can settle their people quickly and the areas they have to leave abandoned for some time. So they have this all planned out. All planned out. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but they have a plan to do it if it comes to that crunch. And if they can't get America the easy way, they will take America the hard way.
Well, I don't think anybody doubts they have the ability to put the boots on the ground. I mean, they've got a huge military and access to millions and millions of men, like you say.
Yeah, and Americans say, oh, look, China would never attack America because you owe them so much money. Well, how ridiculous is that? You know, they'd be just foreclosing on a mortgage. You know, what would they rather have? A whole lot of worthless paper money from you or your land or your country? You know, they wouldn't mind. You know, if they have to lose 30 million men and spend a bit of money to take America, that's a pretty good bargain, I think.
Sure, and we won't be bugging them anymore. We won't be a pain for them anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You're not paying them anyway, so why would they worry?
So so let's transition out of Scare the Crap Out of You Radio, just in case just in case people think we're going to go farther. I have somebody in the chat room wants to make sure, for one, we don't tell you what time it is so you don't leave, and another one wants to know about Hillary and the commie connection. We haven't really tapped the Hillary thing yet.
Yeah, well, look, Hillary is as bad as any of them, if not worse. You know, she obviously did her thesis on Saul Alinsky, you know, the Marxist from Chicago. You know, so you've got Cesar Chavez, Barack Obama, and Hillary all owe their political background to Saul Alinsky. But what people don't know is that Hillary, one of her first jobs, was an intern for a communist law firm in San Francisco, Ted Truhaft's law firm. And when I say communist, I don't mean liberal or progressive. These were Communist Party members. Ted Truhaft was a longtime Communist Party member. Doris Brin Walker, another member of the firm, was a longtime Communist Party member, was until she died. And of all the law firms in the United States, that's the one Hillary Clinton went to intern at.
Oh, she didn't know. She didn't know they were communists before she went there.
Oh no, of course not. You know,
They never talk politics.
Yeah,
I'm sure she was horrified when she found out. You know,
that's right.
But, you know, you look at Bill. You know, Bill was active in the anti-war movement, the peace movement at Oxford University. He went to Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union in 1970. Stayed with a prominent Czech communist family. Who is active in the peace movement in 1970 and goes to Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union? Who does that? Is this your normal American kid with normal American values?
Hitchhiking across Europe.
They go. Most of them go to Spain and France and Rome and the Greek islands and cruise around the Mediterranean and Ibiza and places like this. They don't go to Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War. Unless they have some sympathies in that direction. And everything, you know, Bill Clinton did more to gut your military than virtually anybody. You know, he did huge damage to your military, and he gave a whole lot of military secrets to the Chinese in exchange for campaign donations. You know, and the guy is some people still have respect for this guy.
Forget
Monica Lewinsky. He sold out your country.
I think
he sold out
your
country for money and ideology.
Yeah, I think he starts looking good just because of Obama. I think when his face used to come on the TV, people would recoil, and now it's kind of like, kind of miss him.
Obama makes Jimmy Carter look good.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, you start looking at those folks, and you don't dislike them as much.
I thought.
Wouldn't you have Carter back in a flash?
Yeah.
If I didn't have to listen to him talk.
Yeah.
He was so slow. Yeah. There was something just painfully slow.
Trevor, what you were talking about earlier about Leon Panetta, I found fascinating. His background with the Santa Cruz Democratic Party and his anti-Reagan stances. I don't think people really know a lot about that either.
No, look, he was absolutely hammering Reagan on. Reagan was trying to contain communism in Latin America. You know, he was trying to stop the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, etc. He took out the communists out of Grenada and the Caribbean. And Leon Panetta spent most of his time in Congress hammering Reagan on that. He was one of the biggest Reagan opponents. And you just think about this. You go back to that Vietnam War. You know, I've talked about how the communists influence policy in your country. That's their big secret. You think of the Vietnam War. American troops won every battle, yet they lost that war. They lost that war because you had people in your Congress, Democrats, who were working with the Communist Party USA, who were working with the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, who were working with the Communist Party of North Vietnam to defund the South Vietnamese government and hamstring your troops on the ground at every turn, just like they're doing in Afghanistan and Iraq now. You know, with the rules of engagement. You weren't allowed to bomb North Vietnam. You weren't allowed to do a whole bunch of stuff. You had to sit there and take incursion after incursion while these Marxist Democrats in your Congress were actively sabotaging your war effort, working with the Communist Party USA, the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, and the Communist Party of North Vietnam. Those people suffered no punishment for that. They betrayed your troops and betrayed your country, suffered no punishment, and one of them is now Secretary of State. You know, that's what I'm talking about here.
See, and that kind of stuff is just, that's the part that I think people don't understand. So all that, I'm starting to see Hillary bumper stickers. It's like, come on, do your homework. Hey, we have Dawn on the line who has a question for you. Dawn, are you in there?
Yes, we are.
Hi, Dawn.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, my wife and I have been listening, and we're very happy to hear what your guest has to say about the Tea Party movement. If he were a leader or one of the leaders in the party at this time, how would he go about advising us, telling us perhaps the direction that we should take and improve upon what we are doing? I'll take my answer over on the air.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, look, this goes back to 1976. Now, that was the year Ronald Reagan stood up, and the Tea Party types of the time got behind Reagan in the hundreds of thousands, and the Republican old guard did everything they could to sabotage Reagan and to stop him. And they gave Gerald Ford the nomination in 76. Ford went up against Carter, and Carter won. And look what happened to you. Then the Tea Party people, the grassroots, got behind Reagan again in 1980, and they got more organized, and they took over those precinct positions in the Republican Party, and this time they forced the GOP to give them their candidate. The people chose the candidate. The Tea Party chose Reagan. Reagan took the country in a landslide, and you had the Reagan Revolution, the best president of the 20th century. So right now, you've had your 76, you had your 2010. You're facing 2016. You have to be the people who decide the next Republican Party candidate.
Yeah, I think if
you
we don't
have to be in that position.
And if you had a pick, our perennial questioner on there, she said, who would be your pick for 2016?
Absolutely, Ted Cruz. Absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you, this is what Ted Cruz should do. No, this is what I've been advocating around the country. See, you got a very divided. See, Reagan was great because he could unify the social conservatives and the defense conservatives and the economic conservatives. He got all three legs of the stool. That's why he won. But right now, your base is disunited. You've got the libertarians over there. You've got the social conservatives, fiscal conservatives, defense conservatives. You've got the moderates, 2 million Republicans who didn't even vote last time. And you've got several million evangelical Christians who don't vote at all. So if I was Ted Cruz, I'd be trying to get that Reagan base together now, because you've got to go way beyond Reagan. You've got to actually restore your constitution and gut your federal government. So to unify the base, to get everybody on board, this is what I would do. If I was Ted Cruz, I'd got all of these groups, I'd say the first thing I'm going to do if you support me now is to put Alan West on my VP ticket. Then, for you libertarians, you vote for me this time. Rand Paul will be Secretary of the Treasury, and he can do what he damn well wants to the Federal Reserve and the IRS, carte blanche. Yep. Then Sarah Palin, Secretary of Energy, drill baby drill, Keystone Pipeline, $2 a gallon gas for every American family. Scott Walker, Secretary of Labor, right to work all over America, right to work. Michelle Bachmann, Secretary of Commerce, eliminate the EPA, eliminate OSH, get the government off the backs of business. John Bolton, Secretary of State, rebuild your alliances, tell your enemies where to get off. Ambassador to the United Nations, nobody.
Right on. Yeah, we don't need that.
You're nobody.
Yeah, we're all done with that.
Dr. Ben Carson, Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Yay.
Attorney General Mark Levin.
That's a really big can of whoop-ass.
or Trey Gowdy. For the Christians who don't vote but do care about the education of their children, I'd put David Barton as Secretary of Education. Common Core's gone. Homeschooling's protected. You think about it. You have a whole team. Would that unify the base?
Yeah, if they announced all that ahead of time, that would just be amazing.
You'd be over the moon, wouldn't you? You'd get out, you'd campaign, you'd open your checkbook. Everybody gets something.
Yeah.
Everybody gets someone to inspire them. The whole base has someone to get behind. Everybody gets a slice of the pie.
Rather than try to have one guy try to pull everybody. Hey, what about defense? What about...
Well, I haven't, look, there's a few options for that. I haven't really considered, you know, Alan West would be great for that, but I think he'd be too valuable as VP. You know, I'm open to that one. But, because you think about it, you know, Reagan unified the base by appealing to all sections of it. Republicans have never done that since. They try and destroy their base. You know, they denigrate their own base.
Well, what do you say to these folks that say, you know, we have to bring the young people on board and the young folks can't identify with an older candidate?
Yeah, well, it's just, look, you look at Ron Paul out of Texas, you know, he's cool and hip and young and charismatic, right?
Right.
You know, Look, he's a grumpy old bugger. That's what he is. But he's principled. He stands up for the Constitution. He never backs down. He stands up for the underdog. And where's his fan base?
It's all the young folks.
The young, the college kids love them like a chocolate. They do. That all the Ron Paul fans all over the campuses, all over this country, they love them. And who loved Reagan? Millions of young college kids got out for Reagan. They loved him. So you don't have to be young and liberal and whatever. You have to be principled and courageous and consistent.
No, I think
and
I
a few
you're,
of those things, the young will rally.
Yeah, you're spot
on. That is the lesson.
You're absolutely right. Listen, we're about out of time, Trevor, and I am so looking forward to meeting you tomorrow night, and we're going to pack the place for you.
Well, can I just tell people where they can get my books online, just in case they can't come to the meeting?
Sure, absolutely.
Shoot. Yeah, look, go to Pacific Freedom Foundation, Pacific as in the ocean, Foundation. Pacific Freedom is what we all want. Pacific Freedom Foundation. You can order both of my books online, and you can also get them on Kindle or Nook as well.
And that's a .org, pacificfreedom.foundation.org.
Pacific Freedom Foundation will get you there.
And we will have your books tomorrow night. I can vouch for that. I unloaded them out of the truck yesterday.
We got five cases.
They're pretty heavy, aren't they?
Oh, boy.
They're gigantic.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Trevor, for joining us today, and we'll be seeing you tomorrow night, and we're gonna have a great crowd for you.
We'll rock the house, eh?
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Now you can check out.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Safe travels.
Bye.
Bob, Bill, happy birthday to Bill. Bill's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Bill. Thanks, Aaron. You're a trooper. KCNR, Shasta Redding.